Gruenberg against Gempler is our third case today.
May it please the court.
Response.
May it please the court, my name is Lee Bonsall, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Gruenberg. Mr. Gruenberg was an inmate at Waupun Correctional Institution when he swallowed a guard's keys. In response, defendants immobilized him for 5 consecutive days while forcing him to be completely naked and denying him blankets and other coverings. Mr. Gruenberg asserted his 8th and 14th Amendment rights in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, and defendants moved for summary judgment. The district court held that a reasonable fact finder could conclude that Mr. Gruenberg's 8th Amendment rights were violated, but granted defendants qualified immunity and also rejected Mr. Gruenberg's procedural due process claim as well as his request for counsel. The district court erred for 3 reasons. First, defendants violated Mr. Gruenberg's clearly established constitutional rights, precluding qualified immunity. Second, Mr. Gruenberg was subjected to atypical conditions of confinement, compelling procedural due process. And third, Mr. Gruenberg's request for counsel being denied subjected him to prejudice. Your Honors, qualified immunity does not apply when officials violate clearly established constitutional rights. A right is clearly established when its contours are sufficiently defined such that an official would understand that his conduct violated the right. In this instance, defendants subjected Mr. Gruenberg to conditions that deprived him of multiple basic life necessities. Not for an hour, not for one day, but for 5 consecutive days. All of those cumulative deprivations were not necessary to serve defendants' purported safety and security concerns. For example, defendants contend that Mr. Gruenberg had to be naked because strip searches are required to identify whether inmates have contraband. However, a 5-day-long strip search was not necessary when Mr. Gruenberg was also completely immobilized.
Also, the Supreme Court said in 2 cases that don't get much attention by the parties, one is Whitley against Albers, the other is Hudson against McMillan, said that there isn't a violation of the 8th Amendment just because it may appear in retrospect that the prison security measures were unnecessary or unreasonable. I mean, they have to be, you know, wanton, or the language in Hudson was wanton or sadistic. But it looks to me like the basic argument here is that these measures were unnecessary. We know that because they were discontinued after 5 days, and therefore they violate the Constitution. And that seems to be the very approach that Whitley and Hudson said must not be used.
Your Honor, Whitley and Hudson involved instances where the inmates were claiming wanton infliction of pain. In this instance, Gruenberg is indicating that the conditions of confinement...
I understand that, but it's the same principle. The prison is engaged in what it conceives to be a prison security measure, right? Your client concedes he swallowed the 3 keys. They were, after all, recovered. Your client has been found responsible in more than 200 prison disciplinary proceedings. He's a repeat offender, including a repeat offense of swallowing keys. So he's a real problem for the prison. They're trying to figure out what to do to make sure these keys get recovered and don't get re-swallowed. And I can understand the proposition that this leaves the prison kind of thrashing around trying to figure out what to do. But as I read cases like Whitley and Hudson, the fact that they thrashed in a way that in retrospect the judge finds inappropriate doesn't sound like a violation of the 8th Amendment. It's just the kind of uncertainty that is likely to arise when the prison goes, what can we do about this man?
Your Honor, uncertainties are going to arise between prison walls, and that is why officials have discretion to respond to those uncertainties. That does not mean that officials have latitude to violate an inmate's constitutional rights.
Well, that just begs the question, right? Whitley and Hudson say there's no violation of his constitutional rights, even if you've made a mistake, even if you've done something that in retrospect seems unreasonable. That's the genesis of my problem. You can't respond to my question by saying, ah, yes, but there's no discretion to violate his rights. It's question begging.
Your Honor, in this instance, there was sufficient guidance for the officials that there isn't a hindsight analysis necessary. At the time they acted, there was case law indicating that under these circumstances, you can't deprive an inmate of basic life necessities.
Case law? In this circuit? What in this circuit at the time they were acting said that if somebody swallows keys, you can't keep him naked until they pass to make sure you can recover them?
Analogous case law includes Gillis versus...
You said case law clearly establishing, and now you've immediately shifted to analogous. What clearly establishes this proposition?
What clearly establishes this proposition is that measures taken that deprive an inmate of basic life necessities have to serve some kind of function. This court has never given defendants carte blanche.
That's just like saying that Whitley was wrongly decided because it's clearly established you can't maliciously or gratuitously shoot a prisoner. Well, that's what happened in Whitley. A prisoner was shot. And one would say, oh, lots of cases say you can't shoot prisoners. Whitley said there wasn't even any liability because there are problems in application, and the fact that it looks ex post like you didn't have to shoot him doesn't mean there's a problem. Right? That's why I say it looks like you're doing the very thing that Whitley said shouldn't be done.
Your Honor, the clearly established standard does not require that there's a previous case on all fours of the facts and law.
I'm not talking at the moment about immunity. I'm talking about whether it was a violation. I don't understand, given cases like Whitley and Hudson, what shows there was a violation. I think we have to accept on this complaint that what the prison did was, in retrospect, unnecessary and inappropriate. But Whitley tells us that that's not the constitutional standard.
Your Honor, the constitutional standard at least requires an analysis as to whether the conditions an inmate is being subjected to violate the Eighth Amendment. Even if initially, when defendants placed Gruenberg in these conditions, an Eighth Amendment violation did not occur, as the days ticked by, they had a duty to analyze these conditions and discern.
But it looks like that's what they did, right? They keep them like this for 5 days, and then they say, no, this is probably not the best way to do it. Let's do it a different way. They try a different way. That doesn't work. They ultimately perform surgery. And, of course, I would have expected you to be standing here saying, this is gratuitous, unnecessary surgery. The Supreme Court's held that you can't use surgery to extract a bullet from somebody. Here they use surgery to extract keys. That was the violation. Right? It looks like they start with something that they view, in retrospect, as preliminary steps, and then they get more serious. And you, oddly, are just turning this on its head, saying they started with the violation, then they did something sensible by performing surgery. That's part of the puzzle for me.
Your Honor, perhaps surgery at the outset would have been more sensible. Perhaps Mr. Gruenberg would have rather had a surgery than be immobilized for 5 days naked, tied to a concrete.
That would have been much more invasive surgery, wouldn't it?
Perhaps it would have been. But those are all options.
But now it sounds like we're in the damned if you do and damned if you don't world, right? If they do the surgery first, that's going to be called an egregious violation of my rights. See the Fourth Amendment case saying it's unreasonable to do surgery to remove a bullet from somebody. If they do the hold them, watch and observe approach first, that's going to be described as unreasonable and a violation of the Constitution.
Your Honor,
if you got them coming and going, there's a serious problem, I think.
Your Honor, this is not an instance where defendants were placed between a rock and a hard place. Their own actions demonstrate that they had other options from the outset. Defendants could have placed Mr. Gruenberg in a negative airflow cell, as they ultimately did on day one. On day five, when they finally made the decision to do so, Mr. Gruenberg still had the keys in his abdomen and therefore still posed the exact same safety and security threat he did after swallowing the keys. Moreover, this is not an instance where Mr. Gruenberg continued to act out or behave irrationally, such that defendants' actions were attuned to his behavior.
Well, that can't be right. We know that this man has a prison disciplinary record that is much longer than any arms here, much longer than all of our arms put together, including episodes before and after this. So I don't see how you can say this is not a case where he stopped. I'd reformed on the spot. He didn't reform then or ever.
Your Honor, in this instance, Mr. Gruenberg's father...
He just handed down another Gruenberg opinion 2 days ago based on that enormous disciplinary record.
Mr. Gruenberg has a disciplinary record, but that doesn't mean that in this instance defendants were justified in subjecting him to the most extreme conditions possible. Mr. Gruenberg was calm and cooperative and appropriate from the moment after he swallowed the keys. He went to the hospital with defendants. He agreed to take medication to help him pass the keys. Defendants' own records indicate that he was behaving appropriately and was cooperative. This isn't a case like Bowers versus Pollard where the inmate continued to act out. When he was given a mattress, he tore it apart and used it to harm himself and therefore was denied that basic life necessity. In this instance, life necessities were denied for no apparent reason. Their accumulative effect was not necessary. This is also not an instance where defendants were acting without a roadmap and how to guide them. Defendants state in the record that any time an inmate swallows a foreign object, they consider that self-harm. That statement indicates, or at least suggests, that other inmates have swallowed foreign objects. Accordingly, qualified immunity is not appropriate because there are limits to defendants' discretion. This court has laid down limits in cases like Gillis versus Lischer and Wells versus Franzen, where there were similarly safety and security concerns at play, and yet defendants were still not allowed to deny basic life necessities to the inmates in those cases. Your Honors, that defendants' own actions demonstrate that these extreme measures were not required from the start also indicates that in addition to serving their safety and security concerns, defendants may have been punishing Mr. Gruenberg.
When you talk about punishment, you insist this was punishment because of all this long list of things he's done wrong, and say, well, all right, well, this guy got to get a little more. Now, of course, how many x-rays did they take? Five or six?
Yeah.
You know, and 15 minutes, every 15 minutes, they're checking on him. And if you talk about cruel and unusual punishment, what prison personnel has to go through the feces to look for the key, you know? So I'm just wondering, I realize in hindsight, the dry cell and whatever the other one is, that may be the better thing to do next time, which may well occur. But this time, I don't think that we should perceive that they were trying to punish him.
Your Honor, that defendants had to observe Mr. Gruenberg every 15 minutes demonstrates their knowledge that they were subjecting him to severe conditions. And as they made those 15-minute rounds, they took notes that Mr. Gruenberg complained of pain and demanded to have something to keep him warm. Officials need to act reasonably at some point in those 3 days or in those 5 days.
I don't understand what this punishment business is about. I understand cruel and unusual punishment. I understand your Eighth Amendment argument. I don't understand this Fifth Amendment argument. The premise seems to be that if they do something as punishment, you need different hearings or procedures than if you're doing something for administrative reasons. That, of course, is an issue that was before this court en banc 21 years ago in Wallace against Robinson. You don't cite Wallace, you don't try to distinguish Wallace, but the argument you're making appears to be the very argument that we sat en banc and rejected in Wallace.
Your Honor, the district court held that procedural due process necessarily did not apply here because Mr. Gruenberg's conditions were not punishment. What we're asserting is that
held in Wallace that it doesn't make any difference whatsoever whether particular measures are punishment or not. None.
Then that is another reason why the district court's opinion was wrong, because they precluded Mr. Gruenberg's summary procedural due process claim solely on the basis that it was not punishment. We're asserting that that was an error because it could have been punishment, but also that Mr. Gruenberg should have been awarded procedural due process because he was subjected to atypical conditions of confinement. Your Honors, ultimately, this is a case in which Mr. Gruenberg's condition gave rise to serious constitutional violations. Qualified immunity does not apply, and Mr. Gruenberg should have been appointed counsel to help him litigate these claims. If Your Honors have no further questions at this time, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, Ms. Bonson.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. I'm Jody Schmelzer, Assistant Attorney General for the State of Wisconsin, and I represent the defendant appellees in this case, 23 former and current officials of the Lupon Correctional Institution and the State of Wisconsin Department of Corrections. The district court did correctly decide the issue of qualified immunity in this case, Your Honors, because there are no closely analogous cases that would have given these defendants notice that the actions that they took in response to Mr. Gruenberg's swallowing of three prison security keys violated a clearly established right. Qualified immunity and the purpose of it is to protect all but the plainly incompetent from knowingly violating the law. And in this case, qualified immunity did just that. The judge found that this was an unprecedented situation, and it was at this prison. And I think the scarcity of any Eighth Amendment or any constitutional case law on an issue of what to do when an inmate swallows keys or swallows foreign objects, for that matter, attests to the fact that there wasn't a clear roadmap for these defendants to follow in this situation.
You said at this prison. Does that mean it was somewhere else or in any prison that you knew of?
In the record, the record is this prison. However, these defendants are also administrators for the entire Department of Corrections, some of these defendants. And this was an unprecedented situation that they were dealing with as well. So I assume it was in any prison in their tenure as officials at the Wisconsin Department of Corrections. And again, the lack of any case law, and there's a wealth of it on Eighth Amendment claims, but the lack of any case law on what prison officials can do to maintain control of keys. This isn't just swallowing a piece of glass or swallowing another foreign object, which we know Mr. Gruenberg has done in the past and had a history of doing. This is prison security keys. These are the keys to the prison. And this is an unprecedented security breach when it comes to the institution and maintaining the order and the safety of the institution. And Judge Griesbach was correct when he held that we have to give these defendants breathing room, that we have to, that qualified immunity gives them some breathing room to make these tough calls, even if the judgments were mistaken.
Schnelzer, not addressing the restraints, do you think there's any case law in the circuit that speaks to the issue of nudity? And what would be your view of the necessity of view of even in these difficult circumstances of taking the keys to the prison of keeping someone unclothed for 5 days?
I think that the there's not clear case law on how and what circumstances we can keep an inmate nude.
But we have some case law suggesting that that's not a desired approach.
I would agree with that, Your Honor. I think that there is case law that in other circumstances, that in combination with other conditions of confinement, give rise to an Eighth Amendment violation. However, I think it's important, and one of the cases that's relied on heavily by Mr. Gruenberg is the Wells case. And in that case, the inmate was kept restrained for 9 days and in total body restraints. And
well, that's why I set aside the restraints issue. I'm sympathetic to prison officials, particularly in this setting and with this individual's history. I'm just trying to focus on whether or not we have, and maybe we don't, an isolated incidence with the nudity that should give us some pause.
I'm not aware of that, Judge, but in the Bowers case, which was affirmed by this court, in that case the inmate was restrained nude. He did have a towel that was placed over his groin area, but I think that's probably one of the closest cases in this circuit to the condition of nudity and
well,
keeping
it just poses the question of the various approaches taken in this case. One can, it seems to me, make the case for prison decisions and discretion, but it's a little harder to find the reasoning behind. Now there may be, and I just haven't picked up on it, but I
think the record in this case clearly demonstrates why Mr. Gruenberg was required to be nude. And Judge Griesbach gave a very good quote that by consuming these keys, Mr. Gruenberg made his body and all of its most private...
I think he swallowed them, but I doubt that he consumed them.
That he's swallowing these keys. Thank you, Judge. That he made his body and its most embarrassing and private functions a matter of prison security. And in the judgment of these prison officials, they thought they needed to ensure at all costs that those keys would not be passed undetected, and they couldn't do that if he was being restrained in clothing or if he had a blanket over him to keep him warm. And there's also another important reason in the record to justify why he wasn't given a blanket or clothing, and that is because he had just swallowed three keys. He's had a history, and this court is aware of his issues with impulsive and explosive behaviors in the prison. He's had cases where he has harmed himself, disfigurement violations.
Yeah, but I'm still at a loss to to understand if he's restrained wearing, let's say, a surgical sheet or whatever that's called when you preoperative garment is put on you, how he could get, first of all, there'd be no buttons on, I assume, on such a garment, how he could get to the tie even. You clearly have a strong case as to the individual and his history, but if he's immobilized, I just don't see the added protection for the officials with the issue of a total nudity.
Your Honor, these officials, and in the record, these officials, and it's not possible to put in decades of training and experience and the things they've witnessed inmates doing to themselves and with contraband.
Well, I appreciate that. I understand where Shanks can be hidden, and that's why I separated out immediately in my inquiry and dialogue with you the issue of the restraints. But it does give a little tilt to the argument that there's some perhaps punishment lesson to be learned for the prisoner by the condition they now place him in so that he won't repeat it. Now, maybe that's some therapeutic prison approach that if you don't want to be nude for 5 days, you ought not to be about swallowing keys. I don't want to particularly get into that, but I think it is the arguably most challenging issue for you on the qualified immunity.
And it is part of the record, too, and I have personally seen an inmate wiggle out of these rip restraints. So this is in their minds as they're evaluating this individual that has in his possession, albeit internally, prison security keys that could...
Well, but you can't see through them. Whether you got a sheet on or whether
exactly.
it's
exactly, and that's exactly just
unless
why.
Unless you got one of the Marvel comic powers,
and that's exactly why they needed to monitor any possible way that those keys would be able to be manipulated. And the record does indicate that Mr. Gruenberg was given a towel to be folded under his tailbone when he was experiencing some uncomfortable, some pain or abrasion there, and he was able to manipulate that towel to place it over him. All of this while being in restraints. So that's evidence that even though inmates are restrained, these are soft restraints. There's a balance here between that, and these officers and defendants were recognized this.
He could move the towel, but he wouldn't be able to get at the keys. Huh?
Well, that's exactly why they wanted to maintain a complete visual of any possibility that those keys could be extracted. And that's why the Supreme Court and this court has repeatedly admonished courts that officials, when it comes to prison security issues, have to be given a wide range of deference. And I think the court touched on it, the Chief Judge touched on the balancing of these Eighth Amendment rights that are at stake here. These prison officials walk a narrow road. If we impose conditions that are too restrictive, we're here on a case like this. But if we impose conditions that aren't restrictive enough, we're here on a different kind of Eighth Amendment case. So the measures taken in this case, especially the measure of releasing him to a negative airflow cell after medical professionals have told them that that risk of him passing those keys at that time is no longer as great. After 5 days, the medical, an outside doctor at the Waupun Hospital, told them that he would probably have to have those surgically removed at that point. That demonstrates that these individuals were making a measured response to this situation, and I don't think we want to discourage that take away qualified immunity because they chose to reevaluate that risk after the circumstances had changed. And to touch briefly on the issue of substantive due process, I would agree with this court that it has been clearly held that in these situations that a substantive due process claim should not be, that we shouldn't broadly read this as a substantive due process claim. The Whitley court expressly said this at the Supreme Court level, and it should be followed here today. And it would create basically an unworkable situation, I think, in prisons to have different standards to evaluate different parts of an ongoing condition by determining the intent of the officials at that time. As far as the procedural due process claim goes, I think, again, the district court's decision should be affirmed in that respect because it creates an unworkable situation. And really, there's no suggestion at what they should have done in these 5 days to give this individual notice and opportunity to be heard. This is not a situation like Wilkinson or Sandin when we're talking about a past action and disciplinary issues that were addressed and a hearing was to be given. This is an ongoing 5-day situation where that issue had not resolved. Mr. Gruenberg did get disciplined subsequently for stealing and for swallowing these keys, and he was given a due process hearing before that discipline was imposed. But this is not the kind of situation that lends itself to that kind of process. It would stifle, it would really halt prison operations if an inmate is threatening to harm himself, is suicidal, or we have an inmate like Mr. Bowers where we put him in a room with a sprinkler head or other types of objects. It would very much inhibit our ability to protect that inmate if we had to give him some sort of notice, an opportunity to be heard, or a hearing to address those issues, which is what Mr. Gruenberg is arguing should have been done in this case. If the panel has no further questions, I would request that they affirm the district court's decision granting the defendants qualified immunity and dismissing this case. Thank you.
Ms. Bonsall, anything further?
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honors, a retrospect analysis is not required to discern that qualified immunity does not apply in this case. At the time the facts of this case arose, this court had held that it was well established that clothing is a basic necessity of human life, and that even a pair of undershorts, while not significant as to warmth, would be significant as to dignity. Defendants in this case, at the time they acted, were unreasonable by subjecting Gruenberg to the conditions they did for 5 days when those conditions did not serve their safety and security concerns. Accordingly, qualified immunity does not apply, and this court should reverse the decision of the district court. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Ms. Bonsall. And Ms. Bonsall, the court appreciates your willingness and that of your law firm to accept the court's request and your assistance to the court as well as to your client. Thank you. The case is taken under advisement.